Welcome to Between Two Ovaries, your go-to for all things women's health.
I mean, a lot of people just say like, oh, my vagina.
Yeah.
And yes. That's
not your vagina.
No.
Well, it is.
We're here to cut through the confusion, bust some myths, and give you the facts straight from the experts.
You cannot still believe the amount of people that come to a gynecology clinic saying that they don't look right down there and they need something doing about it.
We're keeping it real, bringing you honest conversations about topics that matter to you.
Everything goes back to the menstrual cycle.
Yes. It's a low-risk procedure, but it's not a no-risk procedure.
From periods to menopause and everything in between, we've got you covered.
So whether you're here to learn, laugh, or just listen, you are in the right place.
As soon as I said it.
Hi guys, welcome back. So this episode is called Ovary Overload, Navigating PCOS, that's Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome.
Great. Yeah.
We found that this episode needed to be done. Lots of people have asked us about PCOS. PCOS is very common. So polycystic ovarian syndrome affects about 1 in 10 women. So very, very common.
Yeah.
Lots of people have completely different symptoms or no symptoms whatsoever. And we thought it'd be really important to kind of have a little discussion about what PCOS is and why people have it. Why some people don't have it, what the treatments can or can't be, and how we can potentially help.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of information about PCOS online on social media. Some of it great, some of it maybe not great. So we really wanted to just kind of clarify certain things and give you good information, factual information, and bust some myths about PCOS.
Yeah.
So what is it to start with? Let's go.
Okay, so we call it polycystic ovarian syndrome, but actually these aren't lots of cysts in their ovaries. They're like paused follicles. So because we talk on a different episode about the HPO axis, and there's a way that all your hormones are controlled from your brain to your pituitary to your ovaries, and there is some miscommunication and some misfiring when people have got PCOS.
We saw a really nice video, which we should actually say. Yeah. So on NHS Inform, PCOS video,
it explains
it really nicely.
It might be NHS Scotland.
Yeah. Oh, well, even, you know, not even better, but great.
<It's> better.
But it explains really well how your brain is sending signals to a different part of your brain, which sends signals to your ovaries, which tell your womb what to do.
Yeah.
And so when there's problems between either of those things, that can cause irregular or heavy periods and other problems. In PCOS specifically, what's happening is your brain is telling your ovaries to produce eggs, but then it's stopping telling the ovaries to produce eggs. So it goes, produce an egg, and the ovary starts producing an egg, and then it pauses.
Yeah.
And then it pauses for a little while, but then the brain will be like, oh, okay, no, do it again. Make another egg. But it's not finished making that other first egg. So you get lots of paused eggs, which are like what Nick was describing as they looked like little cysts on ovaries on scans. And we used to think that they were cysts, but we kind of now know that they're actually paused eggs.
Yeah.
That's where the description of polycystic ovary syndrome came from.
It should be paused egg.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really nice description of what's actually happening in the ovary.
And I think people get very concerned that when you have polycystic ovaries, you've got lots of cysts, which are abnormal, and your ovaries are massive because you've got lots of cysts, which are abnormal, and they're going to cause lots of pain and lots of problems. And I think the first thing is having polycystic ovarian syndrome does not mean that you've got lots of cysts in your ovaries that are causing problems. It means that you have lots of these paused follicles. So they're paused like eggs that haven't been released because your brain doesn't kind of tell your ovary to release an egg. And these ovaries are only kind of slightly bulkier usually than kind of a, in inverted commas, normal ovary, and they don't cause pain. So I think those are the first things to kind of get out there. So if you have got pain, it might be related to something else. I'm not saying that you don't have pain and you have polycystic ovaries. You could have some other thing going on, but polycystic ovaries in themselves shouldn't cause pain.
Am I right in thinking that people who have PCOS can still have painful periods?
Yes.
But that's unrelated to the PCOS itself?
Yeah, it's unrelated to the ovaries themselves. Mm-hmm.
The ovaries shouldn't cause pain, but you can still have painful periods.
Yeah. No. The problem is with PCOS is, as we were saying, these kind of signals are really out of whack, basically. So some people will have lots of periods, some people will have no periods, and I mean absolutely no periods whatsoever. And some people will just kind of, at some point, their brain will shoot off a messenger that will tell their ovary to ovulate, so release an egg. So there is always a potential to get pregnant when you've got PCOS if you're not having regular periods. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to get pregnant, use contraception. We've said that along mm-hmm. with everything. If you've got premature ovarian insufficiency, if you've got PCOS, if you've mm-hmm. got any other condition and you don't want to be pregnant, then you should be on contraception. Mm-hmm. So PCOS, at some point, you might have a period out of the blue, and that's because you have released an egg. Mm-hmm. So you've gone into that second part of your menstrual cycle. So the menstrual cycle, that phase that in an inverted commas normal menstrual cycle would be in the textbook 28 days. You have moved from the first 14 days to the second 14 days. So first 14 days dominated by estrogen, second 14 days dominated by progesterone, which will then mean that you will have a period. When you have a period though, and you've not had a period for a long time, it could be heavy, light, long, short. There's no kind of definite textbook at all with PCOS as to what your periods will be like.
But some people with PCOS can have completely normal periods as well.
They can. So there's a real range of symptoms. So, like, putting it really, really simply, mixed messages from the brain to the ovary mean that you may or may not release an egg every month. So some women with PCOS will ovulate every month and will have regular periods. Yeah. Some women, the brain will get the ovary confused and it will start and stop to get an egg ready for ovulation, may throw one off every now and again.
Yeah.
So you may have a period every few cycles, but it's really hard to know for some women when that period will be. Yeah. Hard then, if you're trying to get pregnant, to know when to have sex. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the symptoms can be completely variable depending on what's going on in the hormone imbalance.
Mm-hmm. So what are the other symptoms?
You can get loads of symptoms with PCOS.
I think because it's so varied, it's important to go through each of them and what maybe is causing them. So if we start with the irregular bleeding, irregular periods caused by what we've just talked about, the mixed messages from the brain to the ovary. And as Nick was saying, so if you're ovulating every now and again, in between your ovulation, your womb lining has got the potential to get really, really, really thick. Mm-hmm. And so then when you have your period, it could be really heavy. Also, if you're not having, so it's really important with irregular periods or not often, not frequent periods, you need to have at least one every 4 months.
So that's like a period a season.
Yeah, one a season. Just because if you don't, if your lining of your womb has time to grow for longer than that period, probably shouldn't use the word period, for longer than that length of time, then there's the chance that those cells in the lining of the womb can become abnormal. Yeah. So they're growing too much estrogen can become abnormal, and then that can become a condition called endometrial hyperplasia, which is essentially a precancerous condition. It doesn't always become cancer.
So
but really important to have one period a season to prevent that.
Yeah.
Unless you're on a medication that stops you having periods.
Okay. So if you had PCOS and you were taking the combined contraceptive pill, would you be able to take it back to back and have no periods?
Yeah, that's fine. Absolutely okay. Fine. If it's you're not on hormones, you need one a season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if that is you and you don't have regular periods, there's medication that you can get from your GP that can induce a period.
Yeah.
So it's easily fixed.
It's very important you have that excess estrogen because you're stuck in that first part of the cycle with these paused eggs.
Yeah.
So you haven't had that signal to release an egg. You haven't had the signal to go into that protective part of the cycle with progesterone in. You're just in that estrogen part. And so your womb is getting bombarded mm-hmm. with estrogen, which means that it would just get thicker and thicker and potentially be abnormal. And not always. At all.
Yeah.
But it is really important, and we will hammer that message home, that we know there's lots of symptoms that are truly rubbish when you've got PCOS. But putting those aside, it's really important that you look after yourself and having a period of season or protecting the lining of your womb with a contraception or having 4 bleeds a year is really important.
The other thing that these paused eggs do is release a little bit of androgen, male type hormone, even though women naturally produce it. And so when you've got lots of them and you're producing a little bit more androgen than someone without PCOS, that has symptoms as well.
Okay.
So symptoms that are really common are things like having acne, having excess hair, it's called hirsutism. So it doesn't mean having like excess downy hair on your arms. It's excess dark hair in like your facial region, male kind of patterns.
Yeah.
Chest, abdomen, hair, jaw, upper lip, that kind of thing. And that is caused by having excess testosterone, yeah. basically. Oily skin. It can actually have the other effect as well. It can make you have thin hair, hair loss.
So it's like male pattern baldness going with the high testosterone. So, yeah, all of these symptoms can be related to the polycystic ovarian syndrome. So it's not just... It's a symptom that can relate to loads of different things. It's not just like a one-size-fits-all, and different people can have different symptoms coming across.
And then going hand-in-hand with the irregular ovulation means difficulty getting pregnant.
Yeah.
So if you're someone with PCOS who has a regular period, you probably won't have reduced fertility. But if you're one of the people that has not many periods, then it's basically less chances to get pregnant per year. So you're more likely to struggle getting pregnant from the fact that you're ovulating less, but also when the hell do you have sex? Because who knows when that egg is being released? It's really hard. So yeah, reduced fertility from that point.
So lots of different symptoms related to PCOS and
weight as well. We should talk about
So people with PCOS can find it difficult to lose weight, and they can carry excess weight quite easily. And this is because their insulin is kind of it's not regulated like other people.
It's like your body you release insulin, but your body doesn't respond to it in a normal way.
Yeah.
So insulin will tell your body to store fat. Right?
So it's not...
Hold on.
So it's not... Go back. It's not using your energy properly.
Yeah. So you're storing fat more than you're using it. Yeah, essentially, you're much better at storing fat than you are at spending it and using it and burning it.
Insulin's the hormone that's involved in diabetes.
Yes. So if you've got high insulin resistance, you're more likely to get diabetes, because that's kind of part of what diabetes is.
So do PCOS and diabetes ever go hand in hand?
Yes, they
do.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So if you've got PCOS, you're more likely to have gestational diabetes, so that's diabetes when you're pregnant, and you're also more likely to have diabetes later in life, type 2 diabetes. So in reality, people with PCOS should be screened for these conditions. Mm-hmm. There isn't kind of a screening program for women with PCOS, and I think sometimes you do have to take and be your own advocate for these kind of things.
Definitely. I think if you're someone that is a little bit overweight and you have PCOS, then you should be asking for screening for diabetes through your GP if your GP isn't already doing it for you.
Yeah.
Because you are at more risk of getting that. And I think it's from a kind of multiple different things. So PCOS, we know there is probably a genetic link. We just don't know exactly which genes are involved. Mm-hmm. So women who have PCOS are more likely to also have diabetes, cardiovascular disease, heart problems, stroke risk, high cholesterol. Those things kind of might be because those women are more likely to retain weight, but also because of the genetic link, there might be that they have genes that predispose them to those conditions as well. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of two-pronged thing.
It's really difficult because you find it more difficult to lose weight and you find it a lot easier to kind of keep the weight and gain weight. But yet we know that you will do much better if you are of a normal weight. So the symptoms related to polycystic ovarian syndrome all get much better when your weight is normalised.
Yeah.
I think it's important to note as well that some people can have one symptom, some people can have all the symptoms, some people can have no symptoms as well.
Oh yeah, you can have no symptoms and technically have, we'll go on to how you diagnose it. But you can have no symptoms and have PCOS.
Having no symptoms is hard to then diagnose, because there might be a lot of people that have no symptoms, don't need to have any sort of scan because they don't have any symptoms, and can be living with PCOS without being diagnosed.
Yeah. Mm. I think, the other thing that kind of explains as well how women have a variety of different symptoms and also different risks for developing these diseases is that it's not just a hormonal imbalance, it's also a metabolic disturbance. Mm-hmm. So hormones we've talked about, but the metabolism is how you kind of like process energy. Yeah. And women with PCOS often also have an imbalance in how they metabolize and process energy, so it can cause them to retain weight and have a higher risk of diabetes and other things that we've mentioned. So it's, you have to bear that in mind. Like, it is a gynecological disease, but it's also a full body,
it's a full life disease. And I think pigeonholing it into a gynecological disease is completely wrong, and it can affect every stage of your life. And I think it's really important that women that have PCOS understand it so that they can advocate for themselves when they're older, because it means, as we've said, you're at more risk of endometrial cancer if you're not having periods, and because potentially you might be overweight as well, you're at more risk of type 2 diabetes in later life, you're at more risk of having high cholesterol, you're at more risk of having heart problems. So it's really like, it's affecting everything. It's not just your ovaries that it's affecting. And so I think it's very narrow-minded to think of it as a gynecological condition. And some people will be sent to lots of different people. So, yes, you might see a gynecologist with your PCOS, but actually a lot of people are sent straight to dermatology because they've got excess hair or bad skin, or they're sent straight to endocrinology because they've got no periods and they think that it's a problem with potentially somewhere higher up in that chain that we were talking about. So a lot of people are seen in with PCOS in lots of different clinics. So it's kind of being open-minded for medics and for the public about kind of, could this be PCOS? Have we looked into it?
Definitely.
So how would you go about diagnosing PCOS?
Great question. You would think, because it's described as polycystic ovary syndrome, you would think that it's just an ultrasound scan. But actually, there's three different ways to diagnose. Not three different ways. There are three sort of like factors to consider, and you need two of the three to get a diagnosis. One of them is a scan. So one would be you have an ultrasound scan and it's shown that your ovaries have more than a certain number of follicles. But the other two are actually not scan related. No. So one is symptoms of the high androgen that I was talking about. So that would be things like hair, excess hair, oily skin, acne. Or if you have a blood test, you can also look at the level of these hormones. So if you've got symptoms of or blood tests showing high androgens, it's another thing. And then the third thing is the irregular periods, or rather sporadic, you know, infrequent periods is the best way to describe it.
So you need two out of the three, and it's called the Rotterdam criteria. It was like a consortium, so a lot of people coming together and deciding that this is how we are to diagnose polycystic ovarian syndrome. Now there is a massive document about this, and it goes into all of the different things that can and can't be affected. But importantly, it says that you shouldn't diagnose polycystic ovarian syndrome when people are really quite young, because a lot of young people's ovaries can look polycystic, and they can have irregular periods at the start of when you get your periods. So you don't want to jump into being like, oh, you got PCOS. So it's a diagnosis when you're periods have kind of established, you're more into your 20s, and then you've got issues, then we can start thinking about PCOS rather than when you first start your periods.
And you don't need to have a scan to get the diagnosis. You can just have no or infrequent periods and then signs of the high androgens or a blood test with the high androgens. And what we see a lot is women who have had a scan, they've been told that there are lots of little follicles on the ovary. They don't actually have any symptoms. They have regular periods, but they then think they have PCOS. And that's actually not correct. You do need to have two of the three. Because sometimes you might scan someone's ovary and there's lots of follicles, but that doesn't mean that you have this condition.
They're young and they've got a good ovarian reserve and everything's kind of...
So it's important to not just, like, put everything on the scan. There's other reasons.
So can it be normal to have a lot
of cysts? So at different stages of your life, different people will have different numbers of follicles in their ovaries. We use follicle counting. So these, like... kind of areas that look fluid filled in your ovaries, we look at those as part of fertility treatment. And some people can just have a higher number than others. If you have regular periods and if you have no forms of high excess
testosterone,
then
there's no problem, is there? Like that, there might be lots of follicles on your ovary, but you're having a period every month and you've got no symptoms. So
don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
And not everybody will come with the same kind of background. Some people will come with quite irregular periods and they could be quite thin, because I think everybody's just like, oh, if you've got polycystic ovarian syndrome, you're potentially going to be overweight because you've got this insulin resistance. Insulin's not being used properly. But actually, we do have some people that are on the other side, so they're quite thin and they've got polycystic ovarian syndrome. They have the same risk factors in later life, but they have to be treated differently sometimes when they come through for fertility treatment. Sometimes the medications that we give don't work as well, so we have to think a little bit outside the box with these people.
That brings us quite nicely onto treatments, doesn't it? Which is quite a big sort of topic because, as we mentioned, women have such a variety of symptoms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, may or may not be struggling with fertility, may or may not be struggling with hair, excess acne. So there's different kind of treatment options for different symptoms. So I think probably the most common symptom is the heavy,
irregular periods. Yeah.
And so how to manage that kind of depends on you. Are you A, trying to get pregnant, in which case we probably don't want to give you any hormones, or B, not trying to get pregnant and actually just want the symptom to go away. Mm-hmm. So if you are not trying to get pregnant, then we can do different things. If you want to just make sure you have one period every season, then you can just have a medication that you take orally and then that induces a period every 4 months. Or you can take different kinds of combined oral contraceptive pill, so the pill that has both estrogen and progesterone. Some of them are specifically good for PCOS because they can help with like the hair and the acne as well. But the point of these is that it helps to regulate your periods. You don't have to have a period if you don't want one, and it reduces the risks of having infrequent periods.
So they're a really good option. The lining of the womb. A slight caveat to that is obviously not everybody's going to be able to go on the combined oral contraceptive pill, especially if people are carrying lots of excess weight or if they've got a history of migraine or clots or various different things. Some people can't go on the combined pill, but quite a lot of other people will be able to go on the progesterone-only pills. That's the pill that you take every day. Again, it will protect the lining of your womb just great, and it should stop you having these kind of irregular heavy bleeds all over the shop.
There's also another treatment you can have. I bet you can guess what it is.
Come on, guys.
One that we love. I was like, oh my God, on the spot.
I know, yeah, like, test my knowledge. Yeah, you can have the Marina coil as well, because again, that's something that protects the lining of the womb, and then you would have the extra benefit of potentially not having periods.
The Marina for people with PCOS is absolutely great. It thins out the lining of your womb. So it's actually used as a treatment for women that have got the first stages of kind of a hyperplasia, atypical hyperplasia. We use the Mirena because it's direct access to the lining of the womb with the progesterone for the problem to regress, so the problem to go back to normal endometrium, because people will obviously, when they're young, will potentially want to keep their fertility. The Mirena is great when you don't want to get pregnant.
Once again, not sponsored.
Unfortunately, but if you want to sponsor it.
It's great for in so many different ways for PCOS.
And
for
then
PCOS.
Flip side of this, managing these irregular, infrequent periods, is if you do want to get pregnant. So if you do want to get pregnant, it's still important that you have one every 4 months to prevent the abnormal growth of the lining of the womb. But there are different fertility options, and you're probably best to talk about the
and actually what we need to do is, because we've said that you're not getting to that second part of the cycle, you're not releasing an egg, we need to kind of make your body release an egg. So we need to kind of tell your body that it needs to kind of get into a regular cycle, and it has all the right signals for you to release an egg. And there's actually oral medications that we can give you for that. So what we do is we check that the tubes are working, so the fallopian tubes that carry the egg to the womb, we check that they are working, because there's no point giving you medications if they're not working. If they're working, then we give you medications in the first part of your cycle. Some people might be like, well, I have no cycle. But what we can do is induce a bleed, as we said, with the medication that you could, we said before, you could get from your GP to have a period like four times a year. You can have that medication specifically to induce a bleed. And then on the back of that bleed, you have medications that kind of force you basically to ovulate. So they're ovulation induction medications. And people will have heard of them. The most common ones that we use are something called letrozole and Clomid.
I'm not trying to get pregnant.
No. They'll be all over your Instagram now.
Phones are listening.
So a lot of people have heard of these.
Yeah.
They can increase the risk of twins, but they can really help people that don't ovulate to ovulate. Yeah. And obviously it's much better having a medication that can make you ovulate to get pregnant rather than having to go, for example, for IVF. So this is like the first line infertility treatment for people that have got PCOS.
And it works really well, doesn't it? Like success rates just from taking something that induces ovulation is brilliant, which I think is
because it's reassuring.
Yeah,
it then makes you kind of be, in inverted commas, like a normal person that's having a period every month. It kind of makes you have a cycle. And if you're having a cycle, then you have the same chance of getting pregnant.
And if this doesn't work, would IVF be an option as well?
We have to be really very careful with people that have got PCOS and IVF because they've got all these follicles, they need a tiny, tiny dose of stimulation to make the follicles grow, and you don't want loads and loads of follicles to collect because you can get something called ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. So it's a very fine balancing act with people that have got PCOS that end up with IVF, and some of them end up having what we call it's a freeze-all cycle. So we collect the eggs and then just freeze any embryos. So that's when the sperm and the egg get together and form something that we would put back into the womb. We don't put it back in the womb in that cycle because it could be quite dangerous. The other things are to try and regulate cycles if people want to get pregnant and they're kind of awaiting fertility appointments or kind of are outside kind of fertility guidelines, so wouldn't qualify for treatment. Myo-inositol, so inositol helps.
Wrong word.
It is, but it'll be all over your Instagram now. Inositol, I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L. I'm rubbish at spelling. Inositol. Definitely rubbish at spelling. Helps with the insulin resistance and can help people ovulate. So you can get better cycles when you're taking that. A lot of people talk about metformin. Metformin can help people reduce their weight because a lot of times it causes tummy upset as well.
But
it doesn't actually increase like live birth rate. It can decrease your chance of getting ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, but doesn't actually increase your live birth rate. So we often will put people on it and ask them to go on inositol as well. But it's kind of a, it's not like a, if you go on that, you'll get pregnant. But it's worth kind of knowing about because I think people kind of wonder about metformin and whether they should go on that to try and get pregnant.
It's also used for people when it's just diabetes.
Because
I'm like, how do I know that word?
It is a common, it's like one of the first line for type 2 diabetes. So it helps to reduce your insulin resistance. So that's why it can help with PCOS. So metformin, because it is, you know, if you've read about or have PCOS, you will have definitely heard about metformin. But it is quite confusing whether or not you should be on it. But I think what
There's loads of studies that sums it up really well.
If you're trying to get pregnant, it can help improve the chances of you having a live baby. But it's actually not for everyone
who has
PCOS.
It doesn't increase the chance of a live birth, but it
I got that the wrong way.
But it can help with regards to weight loss, insulin resistance.
Which can then help.
Well, then
pregnant.
It could help you kind of get pregnant because you could have a regular cycle. But I think people think that they need to have it if they're having IVF. And actually, there's been studies that have like people have had it with IVF and not had it with IVF and there's been no difference in the end.
With symptoms, so metformin wouldn't help with like the infrequent periods, with the acne or anything like that. It literally just helps with improving your insulin resistance and potentially helps you with the weight loss. Which is great. Weight loss is obviously a really good thing if you are overweight and have PCOS.
We've had quite a lot of people come through that have discussed the weight loss injections as well. And it's that kind of, if you can lose weight, then your symptoms will be better. There is no way around that. So if you're overweight with polycystic ovarian syndrome, your symptoms will improve when you lose weight. We have a lot of people that come through that if they can lose weight, will get pregnant naturally because their cycle will become better. So they will have regular periods when they have managed to lower their BMI, which is... It's really easier said than done.
It's one of those things where, like, you have to advise it. It's for everyone. It's good to not be overweight, and it's good to exercise regularly and have a healthy diet. It's hard for some people with PCOS to lose weight, so we appreciate that. But we will advise it because in some people, like you said, it can actually get rid of a lot of your symptoms. Because obviously we've mentioned in a previous episode, but not this one, that body fat actually produces estrogen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So estrogen causes a lot of these problems.
Yeah.
So hence losing weight can really help as well. But it's not the only answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So and we've only said that estrogen. Overweight.
Yeah, don't become underweight because that won't also help with fertility.
No, it doesn't help the cycle if you're underweight either. So the estrogen that's produced from the excess body fat adds to the estrogen that's already being produced, because remember we're in that first part of the cycle. So all of the estrogen is not good for like kind of having a regular cycle. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to kind of have that gush of luteinizing hormone, have that ovulation, move to the second part of the cycle, which just doesn't happen with PCOS, and that's where the problem lies. Mm. With there is because we've talked quite a lot there about kind of excess estrogen in people that are potentially overweight, carrying excess weight. We do have people that have got PCOS that are thin, so they have lean mm-hmm. PCOS.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the medications actually don't work as well on them. So we mentioned letrozole and Clomid, because mm-hmm. those are words that will definitely spring to mind if people have got PCOS. They sometimes require something called ovarian drilling. We just mentioned this very briefly. It's an operation whereby what we do is disrupt some of the follicles, and then it kind of causes spontaneous ovulation after that.
Okay.
So it causes them to have more regular cycles just by disrupting some of their follicles.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an operative, an operation.
Yeah. How do you disrupt the follicles?
Diathermy.
Which is like a heated probe. So you would have it's a keyhole, so camera in your belly button, blow your tummy up with gas, put another instrument in, and then this instrument is like a hot probe that you put into the ovary in various different places. And then that, I actually don't know if anyone knows exactly why it works, but you're kind of disrupting the surface of the ovary, so then there's inflammation, and that can help to then promote regular ovulation, is my understanding.
Drilling sounds very aggressive.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's an operation, it's invasive, but it's not like getting a big drill.
And again, it's if you can prevent having IVF, and you could go on to get pregnant naturally, mm-hmm. then people would choose to have that.
So we've got fertility, the infrequent periods, but then also big problems for some women are the excess hair and the acne.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so there's lots of different ways you can treat that. If you are someone that wants to be on a combined pill, there are certain pills that can be particularly good for reducing the androgens, and that can help with the acne and the hair. But a lot of the treatments for these things are more not hormonal. So
topical.
Topical, yeah. So for acne, there are creams, so topical creams you can put on, which can help. There's also something like Roaccutane, so just general treatments for acne that can mm-hmm. be used for PCOS. And with the hair, there's actually a lot of women tend to choose now laser hair removal because it's so widely available and a lot cheaper than it used to be, and it can be quite effective. And other hair removal techniques and things like that. So it's kind of a management thing, isn't it?
It's really very difficult. And I think we're talking about how important it is to have periods a few times a year, and how important is to protect the line of your womb. But I imagine if you're sat at home with excess hair on your face, then you're not thinking about, like, you're not that bothered about protecting the line of your womb. You're thinking about, I don't want to go out because I've got this excess hair. And I think it's that kind of accessing help and seeking help, and it might be that the first treatment isn't like a one size fits all, so you know, keep going, see if you can try different treatments, think about your weight, because that won't be helping if you are overweight. And I think there's lots of different avenues. It's not a straightforward condition to treat at all,
so it's definitely more about symptom handling.
And everyone is different, so it's managing the symptoms you have. And that might be different at different phases in your life as well. Yeah.
So I think that's kind of most of the things. I think just long term, we do need to say that from polycystic ovarian syndrome, we've already mentioned, it's not just while you're kind of reproductive age, it's a lifelong condition, and people need to be aware that they are at higher risk of other conditions such as type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular, so heart problems, high cholesterol. So, you know, these are the people that are going to go on to have heart attacks earlier in life, diabetes earlier in life. Let's try and prevent them. Let's try and think about this earlier on, so that we can
Improve
the outcomes.
Yeah.
And when people are pregnant, you need to tell people that you've got polycystic ovarian syndrome if you're booking a pregnancy, because you are at higher risk of having diabetes in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And we can test for that.
Yeah.
And when we've tested for it, we can help treat that.
Yeah.
And it means that you have a greater chance of having a baby that is the right size for you, and less complications from delivery, mm-hmm. less complications for the baby when the baby's born, mm-hmm. if we know that you have that diabetes.
Yeah.
So it's really important to pick up. To be aware and to make others aware if you have the condition.
I mean, it's a condition that affects 10% of women.
Yeah.
And also it doesn't just affect their reproductive system. So actually it's something that really, I would argue, that everyone needs to know a little bit about.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, if you have a mum or a sister or someone with PCOS, like, make sure that they know that they should be getting screening from their GP, yeah. and that they have to think about their lifelong risk of certain things.
I think we've got some questions from the public as well.
Okay.
Yeah. I think one that actually leads in quite nicely on the long-term side is, mm-hmm. with quite a lot of the gynecological conditions that we talk about, when you hit menopause, you know, you can expect your symptoms to get a bit better. With PCOS, would you expect that at menopause? Like, are you producing less androgens at that point and then your other symptoms are going to get better, or is it all the way through?
So it's the same with anybody going through menopause. So your ovaries will potentially stop working, because that's the life course of what happens. So they will kind of stop producing the hormones that they're producing now. So you're not going to have the excess hormones that you have, but you're still at risk of all those other conditions that we've just gone through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the more important side of it at that time, kind of making sure that you're advocating for yourself and that you're kind of getting checked out to make sure that your HbA1c, so the test that we do to check about diabetes, is within normal limits.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just really important.
Yeah, definitely.
So one of the questions we've got is more of a scenario.
Okay.
Someone said, if I've got PCOS and don't have regular bleeds, does this give me more of a risk of a chance of future conditions like endometrial cancer?
Oh, love that. So yes, as we said before, if you are not having regular periods, then the lining of the womb, and when I say that, I mean, if you're having less than one every 4 months, the lining of the womb can grow abnormally, and that can become endometrial hyperplasia, which is pre-cancer, and then that can become endometrial cancer. So the way to prevent that is to have one period a season, which can be done in all of the ways we've discussed.
Yeah.
Or have a marina coil or something that protects the lining of your womb. Mm-hmm.
There's lots of things that increase your risk for endometrial cancer. So one of them is excess estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is being overweight.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is not having children. So many people will be in this triad of certain things. There's lots of other things that increase your risk, but like really being vigilant to things. If you do have any bleeding when you're postmenopausal, then you do need to be checked out. And also if you're of your premenopausal, so before you've gone through the menopause, if you've got bleeding and it's all over the shop, then you need to be checked out as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy for us to kind of take a sample of the lining of your womb and check that it's okay. Some young people do have a hyperplasia, so an abnormal growth of the lining of the womb, and it's usually people that have like no periods and haven't seen that this is a problem.
Yeah. Another question that I guess we've sort of touched on is about the genetic factors. You know, we've said that there are, but we don't totally understand them. But if someone's going to have a child, you know, if you're getting pregnant, you've got PCOS, is your daughter then going to have it, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so we do think it runs in families. Mm-hmm. That does seem to happen, but we don't know the exact genes that are linked to it.
Yeah.
So yes, there's a genetic link, but we don't know exactly which genes or therefore how to prevent that.
Yeah.
To be aware of. Doesn't mean that if you're pregnant with PCOS, your child, if it's a daughter, will have PCOS.
It's not 100%.
But more likely than general population, mm-hmm. yeah.
Another question we've got is, are there any nutrition things like supplements or certain foods that might help PCOS symptoms?
Yeah, so what I mentioned before, that inositol, is a supplement that you can buy over the counter. You can get the supplement with lots of different things in, which means it's absorbed better and that it's got folic acid in if you're trying to get pregnant. So you can buy this in lots of different combinations, but it will help with the insulin resistance. So it will help regulate your cycle. And there is good evidence for this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that you can definitely take and you can buy over the counter.
Yeah.
And then we're also going to be chatting with a nutritionist who's kind of focused on gynae health. So we'll be covering a little bit more about how different diets can help with certain gynae conditions. So stay tuned.
Yeah. We were recently at a conference where we attended a talk that was about nutrition and women's health conditions. It was very interesting. There's a lot of research going on in it at the minute, but I think that's definitely something that
We will definitely come back to that. Any other cues?
I think one more. We've talked about endometrial cancer. People are asking, does PCOS increase your risk of ovarian cancer?
No, not as far as I know. Your ovaries have got multiple follicles in them. There used to be evidence that if you kept on Clomid, which is the medication that increases you to it kind of makes you have ovulation. that if you had lots of cycles of that, it could increase your risk of cancer. But that's kind of been put to one side now anyway. And we only let people have six cycles before they go on to have IVF, or we recommend them to have IVF.
Yeah, the main one is endometrial cancer risk if you're not having regular periods.
Yeah, I think that was everything.
Great. Well, thank you for sending in questions. That's like, it makes it really really good and really interactive. And we like having lots of questions, don't we? Thank you. Okay. We'll be right back.